Extreme Vocabulary is not your typical word of the day podcast. On Extreme Vocabulary, we look at words in terms of their etymology, history, politics, and aesthetics. In other words, we look at the culture behind words. Today, we join a conversation with Abe and Aaron. Abe has done some research for today's conversation, while Aaron has not.
Today's word, gross.
And action. All right, so today we're talking about the word gross. By the way, how are you doing, Aaron?
I'm okay.
Yeah? You don't look particularly gross today.
Well, I should be because I didn't shower. I showered last night, but I didn't shower this morning.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. But, okay. Anyway.
If you got up close, you would notice how gross I really am.
Oh, no. No more of those selfies, please. Those up-close ones where you can see all the pimples and blemishes.
Why are you always obsessing with the pimples and blemishes? Do you see any on me?
That's what shows through in those pictures more than anything.
You got gross on the brain.
Yeah, I do. All right, so we're talking today about gross. And I actually had a lot of trouble with this word just because there were so many definitions of it. You know, I pretty much looked all of them up and tried to make sense of it and try to combine it together somehow, trying to get a sense of it. And I eventually did, but it took me a while. And it's a difficult word, actually. I don't know. So, gross, let me just throw out a few of those definitions. And you look like you want to say something, but you can hold it for now.
Of course.
All right. So, here's just a list of them all right here. As a noun, it's a dozen of a dozen. It's a measure of weight or total profit. As a verb, it means to earn a total of. As an adjective, it can mean large, coarse, plain, simple, big, thick, fat, tall, pregnant, apparently, coarse, rude, awkward, ominous, important, arrogant. And, you know, then we have all the more current uses in English, which are like entire, total, whole, as opposed to net. So you have something like gross, what is that again? Gross national product.
Yes.
As opposed to net. And then you have its most current use, which is disgusting, and that's probably what you what we want to talk about, I guess.
No, I was actually gonna show off and say, I know what gross means. It means 12 by 12, right? 12 by 12, correct?
Yeah,
144, yeah. And the only reason I know this is because of a cartoon.
Oh, really?
The only reason I know this. I would have never known. Alvin and the Chipmunks, I think. They were, like, baking muffins, and then they were trying to sell them, like, at this grocery store, and then they, like, you know, there were some shenanigans, and then the grocery manager, like tumbled into something, and then he just happened to eat their muffin or something. It fell into his mouth. He's like, these are great! He's all, I take a three gross! And then Alvin, so Alvin's like, he's all, no way, a dozen or nothing at least. And then Simon, you know, comes in, he's up to, you know, to his dumbass brother, and he goes, Alvin! Three gross is 432 muffins. And so I did math and I was just like, 144 is one gross. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he multiplied it by what? Four? Did you say three? No, three, right?
Divided it by three, yeah. Or, okay. Well, yeah, if you three gross, yes, you're multiplying 12, not 12. 144 by three, yes, sorry.
What I was laughing at is that the baker is some Italian dude, right?
Yeah, I think a three gross.
Yeah, and that I think actually the word gross might come from that Italian word, or even from a German word, which are sort of similar. Grosso, yeah, and grotchen, or I don't even know how to pronounce grotchen. That word in German, but yeah.
I don't know if that is a word in German.
Yeah, probably not. At least not the way I pronounced it. But, I mean, you're right. A gross is a... you take a dozen and then you have 12 dozens, mm-hmm. and that's a gross. So you end up with, if you have a gross of eggs, you have 144 eggs. I don't know who would want all that, but...
Imagine that omelet.
But there's also a great gross, and I was also trying to figure out the math for this one. So if you take a gross, which is 144, a great gross is... multiplied by 12 again, so you get 1,728 of whatever it is you're purchasing. So again, that
would be a gross of a gross?
It's called a great gross, or a dozen gross.
Well, I like my terminology better. Gross of a gross.
Yeah, or a dozen of a dozen. No. A dozen of a dozen dozen. There's also a small gross. It's called a great hundred, so that you take 10 and then you multiply by 12 and you get 120.
I think we're losing our listeners by the minute.
Anyway, the reason I wanted, we just need to get that out of the way, actually, just to get it out of the way. But that is where you get the whole the words like grocer, you know, somebody who sells in bulk, and you have groceries.
Groceries, yes.
Yeah, groceries. You're buying food in bulk. But this is actually important for what we want to talk about. What I wanted to talk about today was actually about consumption. And talk about how what is gross is what is desirable. That's what we want. But also what is gross is what is least desirable, right? That overconsumption makes us gross. Tell me a few things that you think are just gross in the sense that they're disgusting.
Snot rockets.
What is that?
You've never heard of a snot rocket?
No, I don't know what that
is. When somebody just and it just like flies out. Puking on your shoes is pretty gross. That was my birthday activity this year.
You puked on your shoes? I didn't see that.
Well, I puked on the floor, and some of it got on my shoes. I didn't notice.
I thought you puked into your shoe. Like,
oh no!
The barf went.
What do you think I am? Shit!
Drunk?
A lush, please.
All right. Anything else? There was something that I thought was really gross. Oh yeah, you know what I actually think is really gross? Buying a giant tub of mayonnaise from Costco.
Why would you do that? Well, I mean, when you're buying in bulk and you have a big family and everything, or you're making, like, catering, you know, I get it. You know, it's a smart thing to do. But just the thought of all that mayo in one container is, yeah, it's gross. Mayonnaise is just gross itself, to be honest. And, yeah, no, I've eaten it in sandwiches and things like that. But it's not like that's the first thing I go to. But I do like aiolis, which is a type of mayo. So, I don't know. I shouldn't knock mayo too much. But, yeah, when you see it in, like, that, and when you just see it, like, in its white form, just, like, just the way it is, just kind of like chunky and it's nasty.
You're having a little too much fun with mayonnaise over there.
Yeah, you brought it up. It's your fault.
I just think it's gross. Why would you buy a giant tub of mayonnaise? That's what I think.
I remember there was a commercial for something, but Chris Rock was doing it, and then he's all, 5 gallons of mayonnaise. Wow. That's all I always think of when I think of a Costco mayo, you know, jar.
Well, I think just the idea of buying a giant tub of mayonnaise sort of points out everything that I think is problematic, I guess, with our consumption.
I see where you're going with this.
Right? Sorry. Yeah, time to get serious. No, yeah, but here's some other uses of the word gross, and I guess this is where eventually we come up with the idea that it's disgusting. But you could talk about, I mean, at least in the Middle Ages, certain people were described as gross just because they were, you know, fat or rotund, you know, that they were corpulent. Yeah. So you had some duke who was called James the Gross.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because he was a big dude. And I think merchants were also portrayed as gross people, you know, when they were drawn or sketched out or painted in manuscripts. They show them, they typically portray them as chubby, you know.
Well, they got access to all the food, yeah.
Well, yeah, and the wealth, right? That they're sure. That it's all economics.
Merchant class was on the rise, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So they have all the products, and they're the ones making the money, and they have the food. And of course, what they want to do also is sell you everything in bulk and gross, right? And sell you things in large quantities. They don't want to hold anything back. They want to be able to sell, so the idea of a gross quantity was really them trying to make money. And besides, nobody just wants to buy single things, right? Nobody wants to buy just one egg. They want to sell you a dozen, right? Or more.
Can you sell me one egg? Or that's like, I'm going to get you, sucker. Can I have one order of ribs, $2.50. Can I have one? One order of ribs. No. One rib.
That's funny, but I just don't know. Well, you have a lot of references that I just don't know about.
Apparently, yeah. I'll show it to you. It's probably on YouTube somewhere.
All right. So
Chris Rock again, by the way. A young Chris Rock. Our engineer knows what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Here's another use of the word gross. There were certain coins that were called gross. I think there was something called a medieval grosses or groat. And then I already mentioned the Italian grosso, which is some kind of unit of currency. I actually don't know what the value of these currencies are, but it might be a large quantity.
Grosso, a shit ton of lira.
Yeah, it might be a lot of money, I guess. So, I mean, you have all these uses of the word gross, all these different definitions, and what seems to come up is just the idea of largeness, right? Of bulk.
Largesse.
Of largesse, that's a great word. And there's lots of things that can be described as gross. You can talk about how, I already mentioned, people are gross, meaning that they're corpulent, they're big, or they're thick. You can talk about how even a coin is gross if it's a thick enough coin or large enough. Anything can be gross, right? The other meanings of it are texture and quality. So if something is just, you know, like a fig, if it's still green, it has a thick shell, you know, it's not yet fleshy, not yet ready to eat, then it's considered gross. Because it has a thick shell and all that, so
it's not Fig Newton ready.
Not ready yet. And so what I think is that, you know, we want to, in America, we buy things in gross amounts, actually, right? I mean, McDonald's is sort of cutting back, but I remember the what is it, the supersize, right? And then I think they even had like an ultimate supersize or something like that. I don't know.
I don't remember that.
Really?
Yeah, but I actually worked at that demonic place summer of I don't remember, 99, something like that, maybe 2000. Yeah, it was a strange experience, to say the least. It was a gross experience. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, and all that grease surrounded by all that.
Oh, my God, yeah. Real quick story. Okay, so you know how the side of the grill, like, all the grease gets, like, shoved to that side, you know, and there's, like, it's like a slot, and it's, like, a long, narrow slot.
Yeah.
And they got to pull it out, and it's pretty, like, you know, lengthwise, it's really long, but it's narrow and widthwise. And so they got to pull it out, and then they got to dump it in buckets, and you see all the slop from breakfast and everything, just, like, all these bits of everything in there just going to the bucket. And I remember one of the young managers there, like, cool guy, and he was just like, he's like, oh, man, look at all that. He's like, I'm going to put that on my breakfast in the morning. Oh.
All right, this reminds me of, here's a reference for you, of course, from The Simpsons, right? How do they make that crusty secret sauce?
I don't remember.
They put the mayonnaise out in the sun.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's just, it's, you know, again, it's just a joke to talk about how gross our food is, right? Just the fact that we're eating so much of it and that it's fat. It's rich in fat and, like, cholesterol and all this. And that's, like, what we're consuming, right? And we're consuming a lot of it, too. So there's a sense in which our food is gross because of the number, the amount, the quantity that we're ingesting, but also that it's gross in a disgusting kind of way, you know, that it's just, maybe we shouldn't be doing this, and yet we are.
On every episode of Extreme Vocabulary, we like to find a piece of literature where the word appears. Efren, what are you looking at over there?
I've actually got chapter 72 from Herman Melville's Moby Dick. It's one of my favorite chapters, entitled The Monkey Rope.
What is a monkey rope?
A monkey rope was a rope that tied two men together who were working on a ship. One of them actually was in the water, cutting open the whale, while the other one was on top of the ship holding him to make sure that he didn't get swept away by the water or slipped off the whale and, you know, drowned. So they were tied together at the waist by a rope.
And is that what's going on in this passage?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so what are the two characters that are a part of this passage?
Ishmael, who's the main guy, obviously, you know, Moby Dick starts off, you know, with Call Me Ishmael, and Quipic, who's like one of the workers on the boat.
Okay, great. Is there anything else we should know before diving into this passage?
No, I don't think so. I guess just that it's called a monkey rope because in Europe, the street performers, when they would like play an organ and have a monkey tied to the top of the organ, they call that a monkey rope, so they drew from that to call this a monkey rope.
Oh, interesting. I would kind of think that it was called a monkey rope because you had to be sort of agile and swinging around on it.
Well, I don't know that there's that much swinging going on this okay. type of rope because the guy's trying to stay stable on top of a whale.
Oh, I see.
But that's a good
What
good
are they point. Doing on the whale, anyways?
He's cutting it open. You know, when they kill the whale, mm-hmm. next is they have to, like, dismember it.
And they're in the water, or are they on the boat?
They're on the water. The whale is like half submerged.
Oh, I see.
And you know, so they're starting to cut it into pieces because they can't. I know, like I think on the cartoon, sometimes they like put the whole whale onto the boat.
Right.
And that's not the way it worked, though.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And you know that it.
That makes
reading
sense.
Moby Dick. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and get into this passage. Do you mind reading it for us, Ephraim?
Yeah. So here, Ishmael, he's thinking about the fact that him and Kwee-Peg are tied together, and it's here it starts. So then, an elongated Siamese ligature united us. Kwee-Peg was my own inseparable twin brother. Nor could I any way get rid of the dangerous liabilities which the hempen bond entailed. So strongly and metaphysically did I conceive of my situation then, that while earnestly watching his motions, I seemed distinctly to perceive that my own individuality was now merged in a joint stock company of two. That my free will had received a mortal wound, and that another's mistake or misfortune might plunge innocent me into unmerited disaster and death. Therefore, I saw that here was a sort of interregnum in providence, for its even-handed equity never could have so gross an injustice. And yet still further pondering, while I jerked him now and then from between the whale and the ship, which would threaten to jam him, still further pondering, I say, I saw that this situation of mine was the precise situation of every mortal that breathes. Only, in most cases, he, one way or other, has this Siamese connection with a plurality of other mortals. If your banker breaks, you snap. If your apothecary by mistake sends you poison in your pills, you die.
Okay, interesting. So, to go back to our use of the word gross, it says, therefore I saw that here was a sort of interregnum in providence. What does he mean by interregnum in providence, first of all? And then, for its even-handed equity could never have so gross an injustice.
Yeah, where we were talking about this, it's kind of, I mean, interregnum means sort of a break, right? Mm-hmm. A kind of a break in providence. Ishmael's thinking, well, how could providence be existing if this person's actions could possibly kill me and they're tied together?
How do you think that an injustice could be gross?
No, I was thinking about this because gross, one of the main ways it's used is conjoined with injustice, right? In this, you know, gross's definition as extreme. It's, in fact, I can't even think of another way it's used, you know, in the same manner as commonly as a gross injustice. So I was thinking about that. I'm like, what makes an injustice gross if we're going to accept that injustices are already bad, you know? Mm-hmm. In other words, when unfairness graduates to being called unjust or, you know, an injustice, mm-hmm. what's the breaking point there? So I don't know. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. Yeah. It sounds sort of like a legal term in a way, where there's a certain point at which an injustice becomes malicious, perhaps, or just beyond the pale, I guess, to use another cliche. That's interesting that the idea of a gross injustice is put sort of in contrast with the idea of providence.
Mm-hmm.
If we're to think about faith, and when I was first reading this passage, I thought he was saying that, you know, because they were bound together, like God or the universe or whatever sense of justice there was in the world wouldn't allow them both to die.
based on the mistakes of the one. But he's actually saying that the mistakes of the one are always causing others to be destroyed in a way, right?
Right, and I thought the same thing the first time I read it, right? And I find out that, no, it's he's actually sort of questioning providence itself, you know? And that's, I mean, that's one of the cool things about this passage.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for this passage, Efren.
No problem.
And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, yes. Look forward to it.
It's gross because of the number, the amount, the quantity that we're ingesting, but also that it's gross in a disgusting kind of way. You know, that it's just, maybe we shouldn't be doing this, and yet we are.
The double entendre of gross.
Right, and so that's what I said at the beginning, right? That this idea of what is gross is desirable and not desirable, right? That at once we want things, right? We want all these things, and yet that sort of makes us gross at the same time, right? That we're buying things in gross, but it's also making us gross that, you know, we have all these gadgets and we have all this property and things like that, and then, you know, other people don't even have food, and that there might be something kind of gross about that, about the fact that we are just acquiring so much.
Yeah, not sustainable too. It's just like, you know, consume, 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 and no produce. You know, back in the Industrial Revolution, that was, or before the Industrial Revolution, you know, we were primarily, you know, focused on producing, you know, right, locally and self-sustaining communities. And now it's just, oh, produce, you know, send out. And, you know, well, that became my, you know, and during the Industrial Revolution, that became really much easier to do. And then that's when consumption culture took hold shortly thereafter, correct?
Right, and actually it was in the 1940s that the phrase gross national product was first used. Mm-hmm. I think that was its first appearance. And so gross national product is, again, correct me if I'm wrong. I wish I would have talked to Efren about this before recording this, because he's into the whole economic aspect of the word. But I guess gross national product just means the value of all the things we produce, right? And the goal behind that, the apparent goal, is that we have to grow gross national product every year. So every year we're supposed to be producing a lot more than the previous year. And so I guess healthy GDP is what, like, what do you know what it is? Is it like 4% growth or something like that?
I don't look into that. But yeah, we that is grossly optimistic to think that like every year we're going to keep producing.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds crazy to me. You know, and not just because I'm not a big fan of capitalism, but it just really does sound crazy. Like, how are you supposed to do that? What if you don't have any more materials?
Exactly, but that's not factored into the equation. It's just, you know, this is why, you know, this, it bothers me when I think about this. It's just like, oh, just keep the course and good things will happen. No worrying about contingencies, like what's going to, you know, what might or might not happen, you know, no thinking, no planning. As far as that goes, or at least, you know, try to suspend your disbelief that this will not work, you know.
Right.
This has to work. And it's just like, stay this optimistic course. And, you know, it sounds very much like a religious kind of dogma, which is like, have faith because this is God's word, and that's all you need, you know?
Right, or even just thinking about it biologically, right? I mean, every organism has its growth limit, right? Doesn't it? I mean, there's a point at which it's just not growing beyond that is unhealthy for it, right? That's when it starts experiencing health problems. And so, I don't know, it just seems kind of strange to me to talk about GDP and to say we need to be growing GDP every single year, like from previous years. It sort of doesn't make sense to me. I mean, some economists out there who might be listening to us, if any are listening to us, might
they're
be
not,
like,
they're not listening to this.
Like, these guys don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, I'm just thinking about it as anyone else would, you know, just in terms of, I don't know, some
We're late. Simple rationality. We're late in here.
Yeah. So again, I mean, and gross also means the comprehensiveness or the totality of everything, right? Which is what GDP is trying to get at. Let's figure out what all the goods we're offering, what are all these products and services, and let's make a sum out of that and figure out how much that is. And then they figure out some kind of, you know, large dollar amount or whatever.
Which determines us as a society and us as a nation and all these things. And yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very problematic to say the least.
Yeah. And it's supposed to dictate our wealth, right? It's supposed to say how rich we are or something like that.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm wondering is if there's anything that can be produced which doesn't necessarily have to be part of GDP. I don't know. That might be a question for another time.
We'll bang our heads against the wall trying to figure it out, and it'll make for bad radio. So,
yeah, terrible radio. All right. So do you have anything else you want to add to this right now?
I dare not.
Yeah. I think I might have exhausted this. I mean, the word gross just sort of exhausted me, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's kind of ironic that the word gross has such a large amount of definitions that it ends up being gross itself. Yeah.
Yes. I like how the kids, you know, too, it's one of their favorite words, you know. It's gross, gross. They love that fucking word. Boop, another beep.
I actually haven't used that word too much. But yeah, I think I do remember as a child using the word frequently. And it's always in the sense of disgusting.
What about, does Kathy ever use that term?
Gross? Of course, all the time.
All the time, see?
Yeah. She,
it's probably in the school, I bet.
Mostly in reference to her father.
Daddy's gross. Yeah. Boys are gross.
Yeah, but she doesn't say boys are gross. She says, my dad is gross.
Because you're cutting farts left and right in the house, aren't you?
This is not for radio, but yeah, or a podcast. But
yes, it is. This will make it great. This will make it great radio.
No, I don't want to talk about personal stuff. I can admit as much that Catherine likes to say that her dad is gross. Okay. But yeah.
Actually, Maurelli told me a while back. She hasn't used it in a while, but for a little, like maybe a month or two, it was the word of it was a fad word. It was a gasty. Which is like gross and nasty combined. So that's ghasty. And she hasn't used it lately. Which,
did she make that up?
No, I'm sure she heard it at school because, you know, she's still like absorbing things and learning. And somebody probably said it and she took it up.
That sounds like a future word for extreme vocabulary.
Ghasty.
Ghasty. And we'll interview all these kids and figure out what it means. And they can tell us.
Every day I think of love, thank the angels up above, they sent you into my world, baby.
All right. Every episode of Extreme Vocabulary ends with a sound check, where I find a piece of sound that captures today's word. Today's sound check comes from Vidley Komar, Alex Melamed, and David Soldier, who, in 2008, used surveys to produce what they called the most wanted song. Everything you hear in the song is there according to what people said they like in music. Saxophone solos, heartfelt vocals, lyrics about love and struggle, all pile on into a cloying mass. Sometimes too much of a good thing can be a gross thing. That's our show. Thank you for listening. Visit us at extremevocabulary.blogspot.com. She filled the ketchup jars. She looked at